The following program, Normal Show Live, is intended for responsible adults only. We advocate for the repeal of marijuana prohibition for adults. We discuss the science, culture, and controversy about America's marijuana laws. We do not advocate or encourage any illegal activity and advise all listeners to learn their state and federal marijuana laws by visiting normal.org, N-O-R-M-L.org. Opinions and claims made by guests and advertisers of Normal Show Live are their own and do not necessarily reflect the philosophy and policies of Normal. Listener discretion is advised.
You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it. You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it.
And it goes down smooth. Hey!
Spanning the continent to bring you the truth about cannabis and marijuana law reform.
I smoke pot and I like it a lot.
From the promise of legalization.
And I think we need to rethink and decriminalize our marijuana laws.
To the agony of prohibition.
One major responsibility is to encourage people to use less drugs.
The National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws presents... Normal Show Live! Marijuana Nation! Now, here's your host, Normal's Outreach Coordinator, Radical Russ Belville.
Good afternoon, tokers and tokettes, and welcome. It is Tuesday, August 30th, 2011, and it's got to be 420 somewhere in the world. Thanks for joining us for this show. We got all sorts of great stuff coming to you here live and direct from Rolla J Studios in beautiful Potland, Oregon, where we've just gone through a new redesign. And we want to issue a congratulations and happy anniversary to Ganja John and Ganja Wife. They are, I don't know which anniversary they're celebrating, but congratulations to them for making it all these years together. I know it's not always, yes, and especially to Ganja Wife. I know it's not always easy living with the pirate. So he's got the day off today celebrating the anniversary. So joining us here in our studio, we've got all sorts of good friends here. We'll go to the Coleco cam here, and we can see Wiz Coleco is in the house. How you doing, Coleco?
Pretty good.
Oh, I don't think I have that microphone. I got that one and that one.
Hey.
I don't have that one either. Okay, we'll get that all figured out. So Coleco's in the house. Also, Todd Armstrong will be joining us for our Todd's Toker Topics later on today. And Cannabis Cure UK is hanging out in the studio as well. That's all right. Let's go to our virtual studio in beautiful Grass Story, Oregon, where we are waiting for the lovely and talented Cannabis Carrie. How you doing, Carrie?
I'm great. Wait no longer. I have arrived.
Okay. So Cannabis Carrie brings us our hemp headlines right at the beginning of the show. So right after this first break, what do we got in the news today, Carrie?
Well, I have an interesting update on the case yesterday about the councilman in Fort Bragg, California, that was shot and murdered supposedly at a marijuana growing operation. Also, an interesting story on data that you're going to love about the prices of marijuana in the U.S. and what that data means. Also, the fear from the Oregon cannabis clubs in the wake of the Wake and Bake conviction that we told you about last week. And we're going to start with one of our own stashers who is in jail with a little video coming to you right up front in the hemp headlines.
All right. Thanks, Carrie. We'll get to that right after this first break. Also coming up on the show today, we have got a little bit more coming to you from Paul Armentano. He's recently written a new op-ed in the Sacramento Bee, and he's got more information to bring to us today. So we'll talk to Paul Armentano at half past the hour. And then the final segment, 45 past, we'll be speaking with Todd Armstrong in our Todd's Toker Topics. And today's topic is boobs and buds. So I'm sure we'll get some interesting comedy out of that. All of that and more is coming up on Normal Show Live. We are the voice of the marijuana nation. You can check us out on our blog at stash.normal.org. And check out our new YouTube channel, actually my YouTube channel, youtube.com/radicalruss. Also, programming note, there will be no live show. Normal Show Live, that is, on tomorrow or Thursday. I will be in Orlando, Florida. Thus, I wore my Florida tie. I will be in Orlando, Florida, at the University of Central Florida, speaking for the University of Central Florida Normal, giving them a presentation on legalization. We'll be back in the studio on Friday. In the meantime, on Wednesday and Thursday, check out live episodes of Cannabis Cure UK, the Irie Island Hour, and the Ganja John Show. We're right back after this.
This is Normal Show Live, the voice of the marijuana nation.
Hey, Tokers, this is Radical Russ encouraging you to check out the great music this summer. And one group you should definitely check out are big supporters of normal and marijuana legalization, and that's Slightly Stupid. Get all the details online at seedlesssummertour.com. Slightly Stupid.
Go, we don't need no cocaine.
Revolution. Swayze. And Cisco. It's the stoniest show of the summer, coming to Missoula, Boise, Redmond, Washington, Eugene and Jacksonville, Oregon, Lake Tahoe, Berkeley, San Diego, Salt Lake City, Aspen, Denver, Asbury Park, Guilford, New Hampshire, Philadelphia, Boston, New York, Baltimore, Charlotte, Cocoa Beach, Boca Raton, St. Augustine, Atlanta, Raleigh, Columbus, Ohio, Chicago, Mesa, Arizona, and Irvine, California. Don't miss it. For more details, visit SeedlessSummerTour.com. Seedless Summer Tour is sponsored by Seedless.com, Sector 9, Groove Shark, Revolution Vodka, and Silver Surfer Vaporizers.
You are listening to Pod Safe Music on Normal's Daily Audio.
In today's busy world, we're inundated by advertising for all types of pharmaceuticals that come with a laundry list of potential side effects. Shouldn't you have better medical choices? Natural alternatives to pills pushed by Big Pharma? At Alternative Medical Choices, you could choose natural, safe, and effective alternative therapies that are right for your budget without nasty side effects. Cannabis, or marijuana, has been a legal medicine in the Pacific Northwest since 1998. Our doctors will help determine your qualifications for a medical marijuana recommendation in Oregon, no matter where you live. Our massage therapists will ease your aches and stress with soothing hemp seed oil or cannabis-infused massage salves. We also offer acupuncture, Reiki, and other alternative health therapies. Call Alternative Medical Choices in Portland, Oregon at 503-288-5579 or visit our website at www.altmedchoices.com. We specialize in out-of-state recommendations. That's www.altmedchoices.com or call 503-288-5579.
Hey, this is Willie Nelson for Norman. I smoke pot and I like it a lot. I learned a long time ago that marijuana is a lot safer than alcohol. There's nothing wrong with the responsible use of marijuana by adults. It's time we stopped arresting and started respecting those who smoke marijuana responsibly. To learn what you can do to help, contact Normal at NORML.org or call toll-free 888-67-NORMAL.
Industrial hemp, consumer cannabis. It's time for this week's Normal News with Cannabis Carrie.
Activists and medical marijuana supporters rallied at the federal courthouse in Washington, Spokane for a medical marijuana dispensary owner today and one of our very own stashers, Jerry Laberty, who is sitting in a jail cell after being arrested last week for violating the conditions of his release on federal drug charges. Officers found additional marijuana plants in Laberty's home on an unscheduled visit, and that led to his arrest. Now, we have reports that Jerry is also participating in a hunger strike. He is scheduled to appear in court later this afternoon, and we have some video from Crem 2 News.
Family, friends, and activists are rallying in support of an owner of a local marijuana dispensary. Jerry Laberty was arrested again last week for violating the conditions of his release on federal drug charges. Crem 2's Katie Utis has more on the story.
Jerry Laberty is a staunch advocate for medical marijuana. He knows it's illegal at the federal level, but he feels so passionately about it, he's willing to sit in jail to prove a point.
Free Jerry!
Protesters rally at the federal courthouse for Jerry Laberty, a medical marijuana dispensary owner who was arrested last week.
I respect him as much as I respect my own father.
Jerry needs medicine.
Because both men stood up for what they believed in.
Laberty violated his conditional release after being federally indicted in July for marijuana-related charges. Lincoln County Sheriff deputies found marijuana plants at his home. He also refused to do a drug test. Laberty explained his stance against the federal government last week in a jailhouse interview.
Someone has to do it. I'm waiting anxiously for the day when they all realize how stupid this is, apologize, and give me back my life.
Local patients and medical marijuana supporters agree.
The legalization of cannabis is this important an issue. We need more people that have medical authorizations to stand up
and speak their mind instead of being afraid.
Laberty's family tells me he's doing a hunger strike from jail. He told me last week he uses medical marijuana to help with appetite.
And in America, you don't beg for justice. That's not the deal. You stand up like a man and...
Laberty will go in front of a federal judge tomorrow afternoon for his next court appearance. Reporting live in downtown, Katie Udis, from 2 News.
Well, bless Jerry Laberty. He's been a guest on our show. He's called in before when those raids were happening at MHP in Spokane, going through a hunger strike and, you know, standing up like a man for justice. And kudos to all the people there in the Spokane area that came out and stood out there on the streets to protest and made their presence known to the local news media. This is what it's going to take, is feet in the streets. You can write emails. You can join Facebook campaigns. You can do that till the cows come home. Nobody cares. When your face shows up on the TV news, when your fellow citizens have to look at you and realize, what the hell are we doing to people like Jerry Laberty? Why are we putting him behind bars? Why must he go through a hunger strike? That is what it's going to take for us to make this final change and end marijuana prohibition, not just for the people who need it medically like Jerry Laberty, but ending it for everyone so the patients can finally get the access they truly deserve.
And we have an update from a story we covered yesterday that was all over the news wires today, highlighting that a well-known and loved councilman was shot and killed while investigating an illegal forest marijuana grow in the Mendocino Forest. This morning, Mendocino's KZYX's news had an interview with the spokesperson for the Mendocino County Sheriff's Department, Captain Kirk Smallcomb, about the murder-homicide of Jerry Milo. They are still looking for the suspect, Aaron Basler, and have interviewed his family. His father told media outlets that he sleeps with a gun on his nightstand because he's afraid of his son. But new details that are emerging in the case: Milo, who's age 69, was unarmed. He was shot several times in the torso. The other man that he was with escaped and called authorities. He had a small caliber handgun in his pocket and did return some fire. But now some are saying that no marijuana was found at Jerry Milo's death scene, and instead some local outlets, but no national ones that I could find that were reporting on it, that they found opium poppies instead being cultivated at the scene. One expose that's local contends that Basler had been living in the woods for 4 months, tending to a poppy garden. So far, the Mendocino Sheriff's Department won't comment on the new information that's coming out of the story, citing no comment on an ongoing case. But in the meantime, they have closed several campsites in the area in hopes of finding the fugitive.
Wow, that's an interesting development here. You don't hear much about opium poppies being cultivated in the United States, so that's a strange development. It's amazing, though, how quick the mainstream media is to jump on the story, you know, of it being Humboldt, California, and it being a city councilman up there getting killed. You know, they want to sensationalize this as the big problem with the Mexican grows, or the big problem with the clandestine forest grow operations. We pointed out yesterday that the sensible way to stop this from happening is to legalize the cultivation of that plant. You don't have a lot of people getting shot in hops fields or in vineyards or on tobacco plantations. That doesn't happen that often. Only happens when we're talking about marijuana grows, because it's illegal, we can't defend it by calling the cops, and because it's so prohibitively priced that it becomes so profit-laden that people will come in and steal it. They'll do all sorts of terrible things to try to get their hands on your crop. So we will keep our eyes on this news story and give you more details as they develop.
We also reported to you last week about the Aloha, Oregon Cannabis Club, the Wake and Bake, whose owner pled guilty to 2 counts of distribution of marijuana. Kathleen Cambron, the owner, was arrested after an undercover Washington County Sheriff's officer used a hidden camera to film the whiteboard listing of prices for different strains. Most of the Wake and Bake lounge charged for marijuana was $180 an ounce, well below street prices. Even though Cambron never actually sold the marijuana herself, in the sense that someone handed her $180 and she handed them a bag of marijuana, the courts found that she was in violation of the law under part of an umbrella distribution of a controlled substance charge, since she was charging members a fee to belong to the club. Now, there are several cannabis lounges operating in the state of Oregon and other medical marijuana states that work in a similar manner to the Wake and Bake Lounge. Although selling medical marijuana for profit is illegal, clubs are working to get around that rule. Oregon law enforcement officers say that charging membership fees to belong to a medical marijuana club is exactly the same as selling marijuana, and they do say that more busts are likely to come. Sheriff Thomas Bergen, the sheriff in my actual hometown and the president of the Oregon State Sheriff's Association, said that time and resources are the only obstacles in shutting down the rest of the cannabis clubs in Oregon. Bergen wants to see them all shut down today, but promises the public that they will get there. In Oregon, growers are allowed to charge their patient for the cost of cultivation of marijuana, but nothing else, and they are not allowed to be compensated for labor time. The cannabis clubs in the state operate with registered growers who often pay a fee to set up a table at the club, and then the club owner charges membership dues or entrance fees to cover the cost of operating and overhead expenses that are unrelated to marijuana, like rent and lights and utilities. Most of the clubs operate with the help of volunteers. And many of the cannabis clubs in Oregon, like the Cannabis Bosom in Eugene, have lawyers who have assured them that they are within the confines of the law. But last year, a ballot initiative in the state was rejected to regulate dispensing of medical cannabis, and Sheriff Bergen and others in law enforcement argue that a cannabis social club is, in actuality, a dispensary. And the new clubs popping up around the state are doing so in the face of voters who rejected the idea that they should be allowed there. The argument from the cannabis club owners is that their properties are not dispensaries, but safe havens for medical cannabis users to obtain and use medicine that they would otherwise have to grow themselves, have grown for them, or buy on the black market.
Man, it's hard to get around the mindset of these people. You know, we're talking about 50,000 medical marijuana patients here in the state of Oregon. 50,000 Oregonians who a doctor has, you know, checked out their records and made sure that, yes, they do suffer from one of the very limited number of qualifying conditions, and that we, as a state of Oregon, the people who voted for this, don't think they ought to be busted for using that medically. So we set up the situation, 50,000 somewhat kind of pseudo-legal consumers of this product, but we don't give them any way to get it. I mean, how cruel is that? How cruel is that to look at a cancer patient who's going to be facing a chemotherapy treatment on Friday, getting their card on a Tuesday, who asks you, well, great, where do I get my medical marijuana? I don't know. I guess you'll have to wait for the weed fairy to drop it, or maybe you can grow your own, and gosh, maybe in 9, 10, 12 weeks, you'll have some medicine after you've gone through the chemotherapy without it, right? Or worse, forced to turn to the black market, forced to find some kid in a high school parking lot, forced to go to a park and meet someone you don't know, forced to go to some sketchy guy's house to pick up medicine that you're not sure how it's been cured, how it's been treated, how it's been grown. This is the situation here in Oregon that we have set up for 50,000 sick and disabled people. So, we try to pass ballot initiatives, we try to come up with a regulated system, and every time we try to, the scaremongering goes on, oh my god, we don't want to be like California, we don't want to have dispensaries, we don't want to have pot shops. So in the meantime, people take a look at the letter of the law and figure out what is possible. Now, for these sheriffs to be saying that the membership fee of the entrance to a private club for patients only is tantamount to consideration for sales, is poppycock. It's ridiculous. If I have to pay a fee to go into the Elks Club, that doesn't necessarily mean that I am supporting the purchase of alcohol. I might go in there and get some alcohol, but the belonging to the Elks Club itself has nothing to do with the Elks, with the alcohol. Same thing with these medical marijuana clubs. Now, what may be going on in the back room with growers and reimbursements is a separate issue, but the fact that there's a building there that's a private club just for patients charging a membership fee to get into, I can't possibly see that as being something that's illegal. And even if it is, how cruel of these sheriffs to try to shut down what little tiny bit of safe access we've managed to provide for patients in this state.
And in the September issue of Wired magazine, they featured an article on the price of black market marijuana across the USA. They took the information from a website that we've talked about here on the Stash many times, priceofweed.com. Now, priceofweed.com is a crowdsourcing website that asks visitors to give their locations and the price that they are paying for eighths, quarters, and ounces of marijuana. They then created a Russ-esque type map that showed some obvious data and some that wasn't so obvious. First, the most obvious, cannabis is cheapest where it is grown the most. Counties like Mendocino, California, where there are many growers, the climate is great for your outdoor gardens, and many people are allowed to grow legally with medical qualifications, cannabis costs are very low, somewhere between $100 and $150 an ounce. Low prices of cannabis seem then to be associated with marijuana production areas. Kentucky and Tennessee that also have a healthy outdoor marijuana growing climate, and apparently a few growers, the price of cannabis is similar to that of Mendocino and Humboldt, California. The weed map featured in Wired cleaned up the outliers of the price of weed data to create a map to show the differences in marijuana as you travel through the states. They only used data where there was sufficient entries to control the averages for accuracy. The most expensive weed in the country is in the north, like the Dakotas and Minnesota, where outdoor grow operations are more difficult. But the real data that jumps out from the reports that we can all learn from is that harsh drug laws seem to have very little influence on either the price or the availability of marijuana. Now, we expect prices in California to be great. They have liberal laws and seasoned growers. But in Kentucky and Tennessee, where the prices and availability are similar, the laws are very different. You get a much harsher sentence for cultivating marijuana in either of those states than you would on the West Coast. Also, Minnesota, where marijuana is mostly decriminalized, if you have less than an ounce and a half, you'll only pay a fine. The prices are among the highest in the country. Of course, around the Texas-Mexico border, prices are cheap, and in areas of Florida where one can assume that it must be a port of entry for marijuana deliveries, the prices are again relatively cheap. So in the big picture of this data, cannabis is a commodity like many others in our country. The laws and sentencing appear to have very little to do with the price and availability, and like other agricultural and commercial products, price and availability have everything to do with supply and demand, just like our forefathers envisioned a capitalist economy to work.
Well, I know up here in the Pacific Northwest, it's pretty reasonable prices, and, you know, if we legalize this, that price would plummet. I know, let's take a break and do some market research. We're right back after this.
It's 20 after the hour, and we have to take a short break, if you know what I mean. Please support these sponsors who support Normal Show Live.
Oh, have you ever met that funny reefer man? A reefer man. Have you ever met that funny reefer man, reefer man? If he said he swam to China, he would tell you South Carolina. Then you know you're talking to that reefer man.
Marijuana and alcohol are the two most popular recreational drugs in America. Marijuana smoking is non-toxic, relatively safe, and has a low risk of dependence. Alcohol drinking is potentially fatal, dangerous to society, and is quite addictive. Marijuana is safer, so why are we driving people to drink? That's the question of the new book, Marijuana is Safer, So Why Are We Driving People to Drink? By Paul Armentano, Mason Tvert, and Steve Fox. Visit Amazon.com or ChelseaGreen.com today to order your copy of Marijuana is Safer, or visit MarijuanaIsSafer.com.
What's up, guys? I'm Rory from Revolution, chilling at the Spring Fest, San Bernardino, California. Just chilling at the Normal Live. Want to say what's up and keep it green.
USVI Namalgo. Broke down barrier. Herb is medicine to. Broke down barrier. Boost the economy and. Broke down barrier. It's helping other states. Broke down barrier. Cannabis for legalized to. Broke down barrier. Join and speak your voice. Broke down barrier. We're gonna change the law. Broke down barrier. We got to educate. Broke down barrier. Yeah, this is Nayora, you know, bigging up USVI Normal, working to legalize cannabis, you know, for the whole of the Virgin Islands.
USVI Normal is a nonprofit organization working to legalize cannabis for the use by the industries and responsible adults. Do your part. Join USVI Normal. Register to vote. Pass the word. Voice your opinion. You can change the law. Contact us for more information at 340-244-9179. You can also visit our website at www.usvinorml.org.
Hey, you. I saw that. Don't go teasing us all if you're not going to share.
Down the computer.
It's time for your daily Toker Tunes, the best in 420 friendly music from all genres that uplifts, entertains, and informs the public. Today we bring you Tunes for Electric Tuesday, our segment featuring the best of modern electric music in the genres of dance, new age, house, and experimental. If you'd like to submit your song to be played on Normal Show Live, send it to us at stash@normal.org. Now here's some more great independent marijuana music for today's Daily Toker Tune.
All right, on Electric Tuesday, we turn things over to Cannabis Cure UK, who's our Electric Tuesday music editor and still traipsing across the great United States. How's it going, Cure?
Not too bad. How are you, Ross?
I'm doing fantastic and been posting a whole lot of videos to Cannabis Cure TV, right?
Yep, I've been taking a few days off. I was working too hard. I forgot what day it was, and I ventured outside for the first time in 3 days, and the sun hit me, and it was like the first time it had ever touched my fair skin.
It's like, oh my God, what is that big glowing yellow disc in the sky?
I could not believe the heat. It must have been a particularly hot evening, I think. But yeah.
Jesus. All right. Well, what do we got here for our toker tune for the day?
I've been traipsing across the interwebs as usual, and I came across. Well, I was going through some activists' Facebooks. They said I came across Sarah Franks, who's Mums for Marijuana.
Right, right.
And her partner apparently is quite the digital artist, and not only that, they're tunes that are quite appropriately named for our movement. The one I've picked for today is Wake and Bake in Narnia. It's mellow but upbeat, chill-out tune that has smooth transitions into psycho dance breakdowns. The synth melodies drive the Wake and Bake through Narnia and out the other side, probably landing up at the lamppost where you're going to meet Ganja John, who's excitedly going to give you an oil hit.
Oh, watch out!
And you can find Dan Flippin' Riot's music over at soundcloud.com. You can just search Dan Flip N Wright, R-I-T-E. Enjoy the tune. Be sure to check out more of my videos on Cannabis Cure TV over on YouTube.
All right, this is Dan Flip N Wright, Wake and Bake in Narnia for your Electric Tuesday.
You want a copy of that song for your iPod? Check out the Daily Toker Tunes at the Stash blog by surfing to stash.normal.org and choosing Media, and then Toker Tunes from the main menu.
Starfish Designs, makers of the original Gandalf.
I'm Radical Russ, and when I want to relax, I always have my 17-inch long original Gandalf from Starfish Designs nearby. The hand-blown borosilicate glass is strong and easy to clean, and the design is sleek and sophisticated. Starfish Designs are available from Bend, Oregon at a glass retailer near you. For locations, call 541-788-GLASS. That's 541-788-4527.
Hey, this is John Papa. You're listening to The Normal Show Live.
Normal stands for Responsible Adult Cannabis Use. If cannabis use is causing problems in your life, consider taking a break or seeking medical assistance. Consider ceasing cannabis use if you have a family history of mental illness. Don't drive or operate heavy machinery while impaired by cannabis use. Cannabis use is not without risks, even though the risks are far less than those posed by legal drugs.
What was it we had for dinner tonight?
Well, we had a choice, steak, fish.
Yes, yes, I remember I had lasagna.
As High Times Senior Cultivation Editor, I'm often called into the field and asked to sample or even identify exotic strains of marijuana in their natural habitat. Now, for the first time, I've compiled more than 120 of my favorite strains into this single field guide designed to fit into your pocket as you travel the world in search of your favorite plant. From a friend's closet grow room to the wilds of Northern California, this single guide covers all of today's best-known strains, plus heirlooms and throwbacks, including High Times quality photos and information on each variety's genetic heritage and growing characteristics, plus my personal notes on aroma, flavor, and potency. So this is Danny Danko, author of the official High Times Field Guide to Marijuana Strains, wishing you good times and great ganja.
The official High Times Field Guide to Marijuana Strains is available at hightimes.com and finer bookstores.
Normal has been the place to go for the latest studies and news on marijuana science, policy, and activism. For over a decade, one man at Normal has written and reviewed more studies and news stories regarding marijuana than most anyone on the planet. First as senior policy analyst and now as deputy director, Normal's Paul Amentano has written for major newspapers, academic journals, and magazines on the subject of cannabis and is frequently requested as an expert witness in the courtroom. His knowledge and experience are an amazing asset to the cannabis community. Available to you now in a segment we call Behind the Headlines with Paul Amentano.
All right, welcome back, folks. There is so much news going on, and Paul Amentano is always on the tip of it as far as the science and the latest headlines going on. Paul, welcome back to the show.
Good to be here, Russ.
You know, the latest thing that I had written up, I'd seen that you had written an op-ed in the Sacramento Bee, and you had some pharmacist coming back fighting against you, claiming that you're cherry-picking data. Before we get to your main story, can you give us any comments on that?
Sure. I had an op-ed in the Sacramento Bee, not this past Sunday, but the Sunday before that, and it was basically a summary of Dr. Craig Reinerman and the work of he and his colleagues down at UC Santa Cruz. And they recently published a study where they looked at consecutive individuals who had consecutively received physician authorizations in California to use medical marijuana. And they looked at the different socio-demographics of these individuals. There's about 2,000 of them. Why they were using medical marijuana, what their age was, what their ethnicity was, how often they used it, what ailments they were using it for, et cetera, et cetera. And he published this study, and essentially it provided us with a lot of hard data on a subject that when we typically talk about it, both sides are just providing anecdotes. I'm sure all of us have heard about who the stereotypical medical marijuana user is in California, but neither side has any particular data indicating who exactly is using medical marijuana in California, how often are they using it, and what are they using it for. So I published a review of his data, and the individual who responded, this particular pharmacist, clearly falls into the camp that medical marijuana is just a ruse, that nobody actually benefits from the use of marijuana therapy. therapeutically, and in fact, people that use it therapeutically in accordance with the law are just out there to get high. So naturally, he took issue with the fact that Dr. Reinerman and his colleagues actually provided quite a bit of hard data disputing that allegation.
Yeah, usually we hear, you know, medical marijuana patients, it's all young, healthy men. In fact, the pharmacist Swenson there, he said, Paul Armentano fails to mention the 17.6% that are in the healthy 18 to 24 age group. What does that say about the stereotypes of medical marijuana patients, and how has this data kind of debunked that?
Well, it was very interesting. First, the pharmacist assumes that everyone between the ages of 18 and 25 is in fact healthy. I suppose that nobody in this age demographic suffers from depression or suffers from medical illnesses like epilepsy, that nobody in this demographic is currently using conventional medications like opioids or benzodiazepines or non-steroidal anti-inflammatories or serotonin reuptake inhibitors. I mean, it's ludicrous to make that statement and imply that nobody below a certain age would have a valid need for the use of therapeutic cannabis, when we know that there are literally millions of conventional prescription drugs that are being prescribed every day to individuals within that age demographic. So, you know, the pretext with which this physician began really exposed his bias. He doesn't think marijuana is a legitimate medicine. He thinks people use marijuana as a ruse. So clearly he's going to approach any data presented to him with that bias, and he revealed it by simply stating that, in fact, in his opinion, even when there are cases of physicians recommending the use of marijuana to someone in that age group, and this pharmacist opinion, those people are healthy regardless of that recommendation.
Yeah, it's just faulty reasoning, you know. And I think about 18 to 24 year old, especially men, you know, because I always characterize this as young men. I think, well, who are doing the back-breaking jobs out there? Who are doing the tough jobs out there? And plus, if you look at the statistics on depression among that age group, it can be a pretty large cohort. So, yeah, I'm surprised that people like this still present those opinions, and you know, that shows how much work we still have left to do in educating the public. I do want to switch over to another topic here. You've got something coming out in the Los Angeles Times here about data on student drug testing. This is something that, you know, I didn't really see a lot when I was going through school in the 80s, but over the past three decades has been a rapid increase in the number of school districts that want to drug test their kids. And it used to be just for, you know, sports, you know, on the idea that, oh, they're playing football, it could be dangerous. And now the Supreme Court's extended that to, like, you know, chess clubs. So what have you learned now about student drug testing in America?
Well, we know it's quite expensive, and we know it doesn't deter students from using illicit substances.
There we go.
Which is essentially what we knew many years ago. It's just that we are even more assured in that belief today, because we have study after study after study consistently showing us the same result. Now, when I say it's expensive, you know, this actually now is a much bigger issue than it was 10, 15 years ago when these programs started to get a foothold in America. Right now, you can't go really to almost any school district without hearing that the schools are broke, that they have to have larger class sizes, that they have to lay off teachers, that they don't even have money for textbooks. Yet these same school districts can afford to spend hundreds of thousands of dollars annually on a student drug testing program that doesn't deter students from using illicit substances and may, in fact, have inadvertent harmful consequences. It doesn't make any sense. It wouldn't make any sense even if the programs were working because of how expensive they are. It makes even less sense when one recognizes that these are expensive programs that don't meet their stated goals. And for many of the school districts that are imposing these policies, it was the federal government that was paying for them. The same federal government that now claims is totally broke and they have to come up with ways to cut costs Well, the reason student drug testing started taking off in high schools over the last 10 years was because the federal government was willing to fund the programs. That doesn't seem to be the case so much anymore. And I have a feeling that we're going to very quickly come to a point where schools begin dropping these programs because the science is clear that they don't work, and in the future they're going to have to foot their own bill for them.
Well, you know, we know the fiscal reality of it. We know the scientific reality of it. But like so much in the drug war, this is built around emotion. And how do we explain this to parents, you know, that are going to be scared and they feel that the drug testing, you know, they feel it. They feel like it's a feel-good measure that that makes them think that they're doing something about the drug problem. How can we convince parents that the drug testing is wrong? And what tips do we give them to assuage those fears, to make them feel like their kids are going to be okay even if we take the drug testing away?
Sure. You know, you bring up very valid points. Obviously, the schools and a drug testing policy is in no way a substitute for parental oversight. And as hard as it may be for some parents, they are still going to have to sit down and talk to their kids honestly about intoxicants, whether it's alcohol, whether it's tobacco, whether it's marijuana, whether it's other illicit substances. And parents and young people need to be taught the skills to be able to understand and discern the difference between use and abuse. Unfortunately, that's impossible when we have a federal policy that does not make that distinction for marijuana and other illicit drugs. Now, it makes that distinction to some degree for alcohol, when alcohol, of course, is used by adults.
Yeah.
But there again, when we're talking about young people, even alcohol, society's message is that any use of alcohol by someone under age 21 is abuse. And, of course, we all know that isn't the case as well. That is an inflexible message that really backfires when we're trying to have these safe and rational conversations with young people. But unfortunately, that's sort of the hard work that I think needs to be done. Something like random student drug testing was thought to be one of these silver bullet solutions. And like most silver bullets, it actually isn't a solution at all.
Mm-hmm. We're speaking with Paul Armentano, Normal's deputy director and an expert witness in courtrooms all around America, usually on the West Coast, though, on subjects of cannabis and science. And, Paul, I wanted to get your reaction to another video, actually, that came through PBS, a fantastic little documentary video we posted on normal.org about marijuana's cancer-killing properties. And you had noted something that had showed also how cannabis is becoming pharmaceuticalized. Explain what you mean by pharmaceuticalization, and how important do you think this PBS video was?
The PBS video is great, and I cannot strongly enough recommend that people watch it. We posted on the Normal blog, and people can get to it on the Normal front page, a 10-minute teaser. The teaser is actually from a 60-minute documentary that PBS put together assessing and examining the science behind medical marijuana. It's the best I've seen, and I've been doing this work for 15 years. If you want an overview, not just of how medical marijuana might work, how medical marijuana might be therapeutic, but what this video does is it explains at the physiological level why, in fact, we know that the compounds in marijuana hold therapeutic value, whether it's anti-cancer properties, whether it's halting neurodegeneration, whether it's pain relief. It was a very, very informative video, and it explained this subject in real layman's terms that I think anyone in the general population can understand. One thing that I think is important to stress about the medical use of marijuana and the fact that we have a policy where the federal government has made it very, very difficult for researchers to perform human trials on the use of marijuana. There's actually a plus side to that. I know it doesn't seem like one, but there is sort of an upside to the fact that researchers who assess this issue are forced to constantly work with laboratory animals. And the upside is that you begin to understand not why you get when you do trials, you don't just get results, but you understand why you get the results. If you're a pharmaceutical company bringing a drug to market, you do animal trials simply to establish safety and efficacy. And the moment that's established in a new drug, you move straight to human trials because, of course, you want to bring your drug to market as quickly as possible, and you don't want to spend loads and loads of money continuing to work with animals when you can work with humans. In the case of medical marijuana, we continue to find in preclinical trials and animal trials all of this therapeutic utility, yet we're never able to advance the human trials. So as a result, investigators continue to work with animals, and after they have found certain results consistently with marijuana, in order to keep publishing, they begin then looking to see why they get the results they get. For instance, we understand that marijuana can possess anti-cancer properties because it triggers selective cell suicide in certain malignant cells and because it can selectively cut off the blood supply to cancerous tumors, which halts them from proliferating. So we understand how medical marijuana works in this particular indication. When it comes to, say, how medical marijuana alleviates Crohn's disease, we understand not just that it alleviates Crohn's disease, we understand how it alleviates Crohn's disease. We have this understanding of how marijuana interacts with human physiology to achieve the results that it does. We can't say that for most pharmaceuticals because they haven't gone through as extensive animal testing as has marijuana. We don't know why Ritalin works, for instance. When the FDA approved Ritalin, we had no idea why when you gave a stimulant to certain people that were hyperactive, it made them less hyperactive because they never took the time to fully understand how the drug works. With marijuana, we know what it does and we know why it does it. And I think that is something that we really need to emphasize when we're talking about the value of medical marijuana. We're not just speculating that it can do certain things. We know that it can do certain things, and we know why.
Yeah, that's amazing. And, you know, like we say many times here on the show, it's the most studied planet on Earth. All right, Paul, we got to wrap things up here, but I've saved the best for last. I know how much you love this subject. Up here in the Pacific Northwest, Washington State, they're looking at competing legalization initiatives. One has this per se 5-nanogram DUID clause involved with it. Any new data on this? I know we had the William Breathe situation in Denver where he supposedly didn't use for a day and tested it 13 nanograms. What new information, if any, do we have on the whole per se DUID statutes?
You know, as you said, my favorite topic, and of course I mean that sarcastically. Look, there's really a bottom line quick answer to this. And that bottom line is that we do not have the sort of data right now that policymakers had many years ago when they set out to incorporate a per se alcohol standard. That per se standard was based on a wealth of scientific data, and it was data that was based on studies that were conducted using a very specific methodology. We don't have studies using that methodology for marijuana, and there's a whole host of other reasons why trying to take this standard used for alcohol and apply it to marijuana just doesn't work. First and foremost is the fact that we have a very good correlation between THC blood levels, between alcohol in the blood and in the brain and impairment. THC, because of its lipid solubility, is just not correlated in the same manner. So while we can look at a blood alcohol level of 0.08 or 0.10 and fairly accurately correlate that with recent use and impaired performance, we can't do the same thing with THC. THC levels actually are at their peak literally minutes after consuming marijuana. But we know for a fact that a person's intoxication level does not peak in those same minutes after consuming marijuana. So So whereas when someone's drinking alcohol and their blood alcohol levels are rising, we know that those rising levels can be correlated with greater impaired performance. It's actually the opposite with marijuana. At the time when one is becoming more impaired from THC, their blood THC levels are actually falling dramatically. So there just is no good correlation. It's like comparing apples and oranges.
Yeah, and people so badly want to try to shoehorn in marijuana into this convenient little blood alcohol model, this breathalyzer model, and it's just not going to work that way. Thanks for giving us, you know, some insight here on the science behind this and the other topics we've talked today about. Paul Armentano is Normal's deputy director, calling us from the Bay Area of California, and we appreciate it every time you join us here on Normal Show Live.
It's always good to be here, Russ.
All right, when we come back, it's time for Todd's Toker Topics. Stay tuned. Some comedy up next. Marijuana and alcohol are the two most popular recreational drugs in America. Marijuana smoking is non-toxic, relatively safe, and has a low risk of dependence. Alcohol drinking is potentially fatal, dangerous to society, and is quite addictive. Marijuana is safer, so why are we driving people to drink? That's the question of the new book, Marijuana is Safer, So Why Are We Driving People to Drink? By Paul Armentano, Mason Tvert, and Steve Fox. Visit Amazon.com or ChelseaGreen.com today to order your copy of Marijuana is Safer, or visit MarijuanaIsSafer.com.
Pot 2.0. It's not your father's Woodstock weed.
Hi, this is Alan St. Pierre, Executive Director of Normal. This year, the Drug Czar's office has a $60 million budget for advertising their Reefer Madness propaganda. We here at Normal don't have that kind of money, but we've got two weapons for fighting back: your donations and the truth. Please make a donation to Normal so we can continue to expand this podcast and our other media campaigns. Even a donation of $4.20 can help. Visit us on the web at norml.org or call toll-free 888-67-NORMAL, N-O-R-M-L. Thank you for caring and sharing.
All right, folks, welcome back to the show. It's time for Todd's Toker Topics, and today we have given Todd Armstrong, our favorite Portland comedian, with Goob the Knob on Facebook. Check out Goob the Knob on Facebook and Goob the Knob on Twitter. You can send in your Toker Topics to Todd by using Goob the Knob on Twitter. And we turn it over to him now. Our topic today, boobs and buds. Take it away, Todd.
Well, thank you, Russ. I do appreciate it. I know people may be snickering at home with the boobs and buds topic. This is a serious subject. I think that's very close to all of our hearts, pun intended. As an expert, I feel like I am, being from Portland, Oregon. I mean, both with boobs and buds, this is the strip club capital of the world and a fairly ingrained cannabis culture. But a few things I'd like to, of course, that they both, boobs and bud, women and men both obsess over these. They all do come in different shapes, sizes, and often smells. Some not the best. And we all know deep down in our hearts, only the best ones are certified organic. No one wants a synthetic. I mean, that's making up for lost time. Please do it the right way and grow them correctly. There's multiple magazines dedicated to both boobs and bud. I mean, has there ever been a subject had more high-resolution photos taken of either? I don't know. We have capitalism. There's Victoria's Secrets and head shops. We have thousands of accessories for boobs and buds. Bras, panties, creams, piercings, grinders, jars, pipes. everything. And most importantly, like boobs and buds, even the bad ones always want to get looked at. I mean, you know in your heart, you, party wants to see every single one. The first time you ever get to see either boobs or buds is often on garage walls in photograph form. It's a rite of passage for a 13-year-old to both drool over each. And both importantly, that if boobs or buds happen to get pulled out of the party often got a hell of a lot better. Like, it really, really did. And sometimes people that need a little bit too much attention will pull it out very grandiosely. Put them away. We know you have them. But something you folks at home might not know when it comes to boobs and bud is that this is more of a connoisseur's approach, is that it's actually a form of currency, because for each other at least, boobs will get you bud and bud will get you boobs. This is something I've learned in my life. And surprisingly, sometimes old women have the best ones. They'll shock you with it. They'll pull them out and be like, wow, I didn't think you could grow such a nice set there. That's quite fabulous. They've kept it well. And some women, you know, like this, and some men have a fetish for it. They like them stinky and covered in red hairs. I mean, that's a thing. There's a whole lot of hot gingers rolling around today. And I do like Europe's approach to boobs and bud. They're more open about it. They're more letting it happen. And I mean, it even involves in their commerce. In Amsterdam, you can buy either on the street, so you can have them put in your mouth for a price. But my port on all of this is I'd like to focus on that the government and the regulating agencies of the world should get their hands off of our boobs and our bud. They're ours. And that we shouldn't depress sexuality on TV. If there's a breast on TV, we shouldn't freak out and charge $1 million and have all these things. Boobs are natural. We all sucked on when we were a kid. If our mom didn't like us, they made a bottle for us. That's what it was. You know, but the FCC and the DEA should kind of leave their hands off of our boobs and bud, because God or nature, however you view it, did give us the best things to look at and the best things to put in our body. So enjoy yourself, your boobs, and your bud. Everybody have a good time. Find me on Facebook and Twitter. Back to you, Russ.
Aww, thank you so much, Todd Armstrong, for our... Give my hand there. That's good. Yay. Stuff in our studio audience here. Having a good time. Boobs and buds. And of course, you get those magazines, you get the High Times magazines, you see that. You ever seen that ad where they've got the naked lady lying down, she's got this bud covering? What do you think of those kind of ads?
I think that would be a special kind of high to get, because you'd be smoking sexuality and a good bit of THC.
Just a little bit as well, huh? You know, what's your performing schedule like coming up lately?
Let's see. I will be at the Hawthorne Theater on Saturday night for The Hilarious at Hawthorne. I'm actually getting my first big headlining chance at Portland, Oregon's Big Baghdad Theater, the 23rd at 10 o'clock. So my mom and grandma are coming to that one.
Oh.
I'll be at Harvey's at the end of the month, and I'll be at Helium tonight if anybody's in Portland.
Helium Comedy Club tonight. Check that out.
Some new jokes tried out that I follow on my face, but it's fun to watch.
Right on. And so when mom and grandma come to the show, do you alter the acting?
No, not at all. My grandma Maloney, oh, this will be the first time she sees me, and she literally believes Noah lived to be 700 years old. She thinks I'm totally Catholic, and like, I cannot wait to just... Because
so the zombie Jesus joke, is
oh,
that
I, I've been polishing that up. That was something me and Russ developed last time when we were post-showing it, and it's a great bit I'm working into.
I think she's going to love that.
She will enjoy it.
She will love it.
All right. Resurrection in the right way.
Yeah, check out Todd Armstrong on Goob the Knob. GoobTheKnob on
Zombie
Facebook.
Jesus. It's on the priority list.
That's right. GoobTheKnob on Facebook and on Twitter. And if you want him to address a Toker topic, just Twitter with the hashtag Toker topic and send it to @GoobTheKnob, and we'll get that on the next show. Todd, thanks for joining us here, and we'll see you next Tuesday.
Thanks so much.
All right. And also coming up, we got to remind you that tomorrow there will be no Normal Show Live, and Thursday, no Normal Show Live. I will be in Orlando, Florida at the University of Central Florida, so adjust your schedule accordingly. We will be having episodes of the Irie Island Hour, the Ganja John Show, and the Cannabis Cure UK. So we'll have all sorts of live stuff coming up in the regular live spots. It just won't be me. And for those of you in Orlando, Florida, check us out at University of Central Florida. I can't wait to get there and show you the new presentation that we're putting forward. Also, another gig coming up, the Portland Hemp Stock, coming up, is it 10th and 11th of September? I'll be at the Hemposium stage. I think Todd's going to be there as well. Jen Alexander, a bunch of us will be there. Check that out at the Kelly Point Park, and you can visit Hemp Stalk hempstalk.org. That's S-T-A-L-K, hempstalk.org. And on, I think it's Wednesday, November 14th, I'll be in Ontario, Oregon at the 45th Parallel. They're putting together a town hall meeting featuring Idaho Representative Tom Trail and a discussion of medical marijuana in the Treasure Valley. So check that out in Ontario on Wednesday. And for all my updates, follow me at Radical Russ on Twitter.
This is Normal Show Live, the voice of the marijuana nation.
All right, for Wiz Calico and Cannabis Cure UK, Jen Alexander, David Alexander, Todd Armstrong, I'm Radical Russ. Thanks for joining us. And until next time, take care of each other, tokers.
You plant it, you grow it, you try it, you roll it, you smoke it, and it goes down smooth.